Welcome to episode number 2 of Feedback, which is a brand new show on Unwind Media. I'm Rob Attrell, and in this episode, I'll be sitting down with my co-hosts, Damien and BL, to talk a little bit about the songwriting process. If we're lucky, I'll also be able to convince them to record a couple of more acoustic songs this week. How's that sound, guys?
Wicked.
Well, yeah.
I don't think
we'll see
what
happens. Yeah, we don't need a lot of coaxing to play some songs.
Love playing. I love playing.
Yeah.
BL's got a guitar. It's like pretty much certain.
It's happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was really curious, and I think a lot of people who aren't necessarily artists, especially musicians, really wonder what goes into the process of actually writing songs. And I'm sure you guys, when you first got started, you sort of looked into it and maybe tried to find how other musicians write songs. So what's the first thing people should know about trying to just write music, like write a song?
It's kind of a broad question.
One of the first things you have to, like, if you've written songs, what's the first thing that happens when a song gets born?
Well, I think the first thing to consider is that there is no real formula that you should follow, because songs that we've written have been born out of different situations. Usually it's either a chord progression that's thought up, or the lyrics come first, kind of like a poem, or just even one, for me at least, it's happened with just even one phrase, just one line sets off an entire like domino effect that will result in a song. So there's really no formula to it, for me at least. Like it just happens out of the blue, and it could start in different ways. I think
Damien's absolutely right. I mean, it could be a chord progression, it could be a melody, but for me that approach is very much the technical approach, if I can use that word. If I were to describe a process in which the outcome is the best, it's where we're dealing with emotional content. And for myself, those are experiences. Those are my observations about things I've experienced in life and things like this. And I liken it to a photographer taking a picture or a painter painting a picture. You know, they might see a beautiful sunset they don't want to capture. I feel like you can use the tools that are available to you to capture that moment or capture that feeling. And I feel like if my song was able to capture that with the tools that I have, be it melodies and things like that, I've done something right. And at the end of the day, if that song conveys that original emotional content and they connect with it, for me, that's the most rewarding. So I think in the like sort of a more ethereal sort of approach is like that, where there's something that I want to tell or convey emotionally, and I'm using tools that I can, you know, describe that with to capture that moment. Ultimately, they're tools because, I mean, that feeling is something that is very hard to describe in either words or in a song, but I'm trying to capture that so that you're understanding where I'm coming from.
I think, BL, I think in my experience, you seem to me more of a conceptual songwriter, and that you have this concept. I mean, when you came with the age I'm in, you were talking about, you know, this feeling of fear almost, and almost regret as well, that you haven't accomplished everything you might have set out to do, and how much time do you have left to sort of make good on your dreams. And then when you came forward with Mermaid, that was a personal experience, and we kind of set it to a theme of a mythological creature. And I think Mermaid is one of our most, one of our easiest songs that our audience can connect to. It's a very emotional song and a very deep and in some ways even dark song that people seem to really connect with. Because if you think about the fact that we've written a song about a mermaid, some might think that that's
quite comical.
Yeah.
Very
funny. Yeah. Yeah. And cartoonish, but it's actually quite a deep and dark song. And I think people will get to understand what it's really about, which is being sucked into a relationship that, you know, is terrible for you, but still wanting more and still holding on to that hope, but this feeling that you're drowning and grasping at anything.
So there's like the whole wheat, brown bread, sort of healthy, sort of not healthy, but deeper meaning songs. But then you've got the really fun ones. They're like pop, soda pop. Sure. They're sugary. They're fun, easy to play.
Yeah.
People tend to like to dance to them.
Mm-hmm.
And their emotional content may not be as deep, but they're still rewarding in the sense of it's entertaining.
You know?
And we want to have a spectrum of different types.
Because some songs that we play, some originals that we play are, of course, at least for me, when I'm writing songs, I try and have songs mean something still. But sometimes I write consciously with this goal in mind of having the audience move or tap their feet or sing along and participate or something like that. Like it's just, it's almost like, what's that band that sings? The Lumineers, fantastic folk band. And they wrote one of their biggest songs, Ho Hey, because they were playing in these bars where people weren't really listening to them, probably based on the music that they were singing. And then they wrote that song to incorporate the audience.
And to like wake them up. They were saying like they literally like just hit their instruments. Like there's a lot of loud bangs in that song too.
Yeah. So they wrote that and then that song helped them skyrocket to where they are now. But some songs come out of the necessity to have something to wake the crowd up, but some songs come from personal experience. Some songs come from nothing at all. And it's true. Like once I wrote the first song that I wrote, with Sons of Pluto, which was The Storm, the floodgates kind of opened and now I'm hearing songs all over the place. Like I'm constantly bombarded with like ideas for songs.
And inspired. Yeah.
And, some catch on and some don't. And it's weird because songwriting is fleeting. Like you might have this fantastic idea. And if you don't write it down, if you don't write the chord progression down, then it might be gone.
Totally. I think me and Damon have a very same approach. He has this little book where he's writing down different words and stuff. Yeah. I actually have a stack of post-its at work that I then transcribe onto my lyrics collection, like a bank. And I think we both do that where it's like a line or a sentiment or a chord progression. And I have actually one, like in the middle of the night when I can't sleep, sometimes I pick up my guitar and I have to write that riff out and capture that somewhere on my computer. So I have a collection of riffs and a collection of phrases. And then Damien has the same. And I think when we write, that's another approach that we take where we try to blend some of those like puzzle pieces to make something.
I mean, it's happened before. The process has been before that BL will bring a guitar riff or chord progression and then explain to me what his concept is. And then I'll try and write it out. It's very much like storytelling or like writing a novel. Like you have this idea and then you try and, at least for me, when I'm writing a song, I try and make it make sense, like have it have a beginning, middle and end, so that people can follow it, easily. But he'll do that or I'm not the best guitarist. So I hear this riff and I don't know if it's possible. I don't know. So I'll bring it to BL and see if he can do it. And, you know, he said that I've stretched his guitar playing abilities from time to time, but we make it work. But it's just, I think the first thing people should know is that it's not formulaic and there's no one way that it happens. And once you write your first song, it might be that you never stop writing.
No.
And that it just keeps coming to you. Yeah.
And another way I don't think we really talked about were homages, because the people that are involved in this kind of process that are in the band, right, we're all influenced by different things. So if you know, you grew up on, say, funk or R&B and stuff, you might want to write an R&B and funk song. And that's how Retro Love kind of came to be, too. And there's like, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, about the funk revival. But it's about kind of emulating what you think is really fun to play, right? And for me, funk is fantastic. You get the wah-wah pedal going. It's about scratching in the 16th notes. And that's just fun and different.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to be a very well-rounded musician, I think should be able to kind of tackle different styles. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, that's an homage to something that's kind of deep in our heads, you know?
Right.
So. I suppose too, for some songs, it was like, yeah, I wanna write a Motown song,
right? Or a blues song.
Or a blues song. Like, especially when we were first starting out with writing, I wanted to test myself as a songwriter and see what kind of songs I could write. And so, yeah, our sets are somewhat diverse because our earlier songs are diverse. Like, we have a folk song, we have a funk song, we have a Motown song, we have a blues song. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones, which are sort of like alternative rock with some blues, have now started to have their own sort of identity. But there are still a few songs, or like several songs, that kind of like stand alone individually as their own subgenres within our genre. And it's really interesting how you can take the same exact instruments and make different styles and different genres with them. Yeah. Same instruments.
Totally different.
Totally different. The way you play them.
Oh, yeah. Like Mermaid Song, I've always imagined like a Spanish sort of flamenco version of it, you know, that maybe we can play one day. But, I mean, you can take any of our songs and turn it into a different genre, which is part of the fun, too, I think.
Yeah.
The reimagining of a song. So.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you guys ever sit down and, I mean, first of all, do you ever sit down and plan to write either individually or as a group? And then when you do write, like, is that process successful, or is it sort of, do you take the ideas and then turn them into songs, or can you sit down and sort of try to let ideas flow?
We've done it in the past where we're just kind of warming up for rehearsal, or, you know, rehearsal somewhat over, or we're kind of like, it's kind of dying down and it's getting late, and we're just kind of just playing around, and we've written beginnings of songs from, I don't know if we've had, if any of our current songs have been that way, but we've written beginnings. Black Hearted Lover was you just trying out this. We were just kind of just like playing around, and BL just tried this blues riff, which I thought was really, really cool. And then I think you probably forgot about it. And then I came back to you like months ago, like I hadn't forgotten that riff.
Right.
And I was like, I want to try this, and I want to try something. And I went and I kind of fleshed out the whole song, based on this riff that BL had started and I think forgot about since.
Right.
And we've had stuff where there's a song that has been in the works for a long time that we haven't fleshed out. That was just kind of like just playing around. But I think generally the process is that the concept comes to the individual first, and they try and figure it out and try and make it make sense for the other people in the band, and then bring it to them, and then see if we can explain the arrangement and the chord progressions and things and the overall concept, and then see if it translates well then. And sometimes that's challenging. Like, I've brought songs to the band that that I can hear what I want in my head, but I just cannot get it out. Like, I cannot explain it.
Right.
Which is a very frustrating feeling. But
yeah, there's a happy medium, right? Because you want to be able to present your idea that's cohesive enough that people can hang their hat on it and put their kind of interpretation on it. But I personally don't like to bring songs that are completely done, because then people can't put their own kind of twist on it.
Yeah.
And so there's a happy medium. And we've found that, I think, in the last couple of songs, where when songs have been presented, we can more or less like work with it. I think we've found our stride, I think, in that way. But
yeah, but I don't think any of the songs have been completely from the ground up done and conceived with everybody there, and like everybody contributing to it from its infancy. Right. I think it takes
an idea from one person.
Yeah.
And then into the group.
Yeah. And then everybody kind of puts their interpretation. So,
and even through time, the songs change.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Storm is one, because it was like
earlier ones.
One of the first ones. The Storm has changed. quite a bit, we tried to make it a little bit more rock centered and kind of fit in with the other songs that we do. So yeah, songs evolve for sure.
Do you guys, like you mentioned that this storm has evolved. Is there a point that you almost want to say, all right, this is the finished version of the song. Like it's done. We're not changing it anymore. Or do you think it's better to have it sort of open to evolve? I mean, a lot of the things when you listen to the radio now, that's the done version of the song. They can't really change it. If you go to a live performance, they might do it slightly differently, but that almost upsets people when artists do that, they change their songs for a concert, for a live version. Do you guys think it's good to have a completed song, like write it, produce it, brainstorm and change it in any way you need, and then say, all right, this is like, we're cutting it. This is the song. Or do you think it's better to have it fluid? Is there, does it depend on the song?
For the purposes of transmitting our message, yes, there should be a point where it's kind of like drawn in the sand, where it's kind of like, okay, this is the official version. But I don't think a band should kind of say, oh, well, we're done. There's a bow on it. We can't touch it anymore, because it's a constantly evolving thing. Yeah. Like we're evolving and growing as people. And I think those songs can always be reinterpreted. You know, there might be a 2009 version and a 2014 right. version, but
like a remix almost.
Yeah. But then there should be a line drawn in the sense of, let's capture that for now and use that version to tell people, you know, that emotional content. But, but it should be open to interpretation.
I don't think anyone, I don't think you should ever say never. Like, the way that I approach a song and the way that I handle a song is that it's a living thing. And so it will evolve. And whether you like it or not, like, yeah, we evolve as people and we grow as people. And so your influences might change. And for the purposes of putting it on a CD, obviously there's some point where you have to say, okay, like that's it.
Yeah.
At least for now, so that we can have this thing recorded and whatever your goals may be, if you want to distribute it and if you want to sell it, like you obviously have to have some sort of finished product. But I think there's a beauty in having a song that you can play live, and like live, you can do anything you want to it. Obviously you don't want to take the essence away from the song so that your fans don't enjoy it anymore. But I think that there's definitely always room for interpretation, or there's always room for some sort of modification to a song. Jason Mraz said that The Remedy, he's played it, in various versions, various genres. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Various, depending on what he's feeling at the time, mm-hmm. or the context of the show, depending on what type of show he's playing, where he's playing, what kind of people he's playing to, he'll switch that song up, and he's got various versions of that one song. So that might be a good thing to take away from this too, is that like you can have a certain version of a song, but depending on the context in which you're playing it, you can change the song to match the people.
That's a really good point, because if you'll notice through Jason Mraz's like career progression, at the beginning he played at Papa Joe's or Java Joe's in LA, and it was just him on his guitar.
Yeah.
So his voice had to play a lot of different parts, and the guitar parts had to be arranged such that it worked together with the voice as one big instrument. But then as he added Toka, the percussionist, and he can harmonize too, then you're working with four elements.
Yeah.
And then to a point where maybe in 2013, he had a big band. Yeah. And in that instance, he didn't have to do all those different things, because mm-hmm. the bass would fill in, drums would fill in, and mm-hmm. different elements, right? So I think that's a wonderful example.
Yeah.
And people who haven't looked this up, go Google this. Jason Mraz, jazz, and him on his guitar playing jazz style in, I think, Jakarta, the jazz festival, is amazing. If you haven't seen it, go Google it. It's amazing.
There's a lot of guys like that, and I think it comes like it takes a huge musical talent to, you have the melody and you have the lyrics of the song down. I mean, they're obviously in your head and you've been playing them for years, but that also reminds me of John Mayer. He did a bunch of his, not the last album, but the one before that, the one with Born and Raised. Yeah. Yeah. He did a bunch of them in a, like an acoustic, like just him and a guitar session.
Something like Olivia was so good. Oh my goodness.
But they're not the same. Like it's not the same as when you have a whole band, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. the benefit of all this arrangement, but it's still he makes it so good. Like, he adds so many intricacies to the song.
And it's just guitar. One man and his guitar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Ed Sheeran's another great example.
Oh, Ed Sheeran's a fantastic example of that. Like, filling it out so much with just like one, it almost seems like they're playing more than one instrument at that one time. Like, yeah, something like Olivia is a fantastic example of that. Ed Sheeran is another great example, because when you see him live, I haven't seen him live, but I've seen him on YouTube, his live performances, and he makes great use of a loop pedal.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
And he does everything. He does the percussion on his guitar. He does the bass part, and then he does the main like melodies.
He sings his own backup.
And then he sings his own backup and adds all those harmonies in there. And you're just like, how is this guy doing all of this just with him and captivating the audience?
Yeah.
And still making music with just a guitar that people are like really dancing to or bobbing their head to and really into. Like, there's so much that you can do. And and again, like, so many versions of the same song that you can do, because when Ed Sheeran records his songs, he's got more resources.
Yeah, he's got more freedom. Doesn't have to be doing everything with the looping.
Yeah.
My lover's got humor. She's the giggle at a funeral. Knows everybody's disapproval. I should have worshipped her sooner. If the heavens ever did speak, she's the last true mouthpiece. Every Sunday's getting more bleak. A fresh poison each week. We were born sick. You heard him say it. My church offers no absolute. She told me worship in the bedroom. The only heaven I'll be sent to is when I'm alone with you. I was born sick, but I love it. Command me to be well. Amen. 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 Take me to church. I'll worship like a dog. At the shrine of your eyes, I'll tell you my sins, and you can shout in your night. Offer me that death, but say the good God, let me give you my life. Take me to church. I'll worship like a dog. At the shrine of your eyes, I'll tell you my sins, and you can shout in your night. Offer me that. Of the good times, my love is the sunlight to keep the goddess on my side. She demands a sacrifice to drain the whole sea. Get something shiny, something meaty for the main course. That's a fine looking high horse. What you got in the stable? We've a lot of sovereign faithful. That looks tasty, that looks plenty. This is hungry work. Take me to church. I worship like a dog. And you can shop in your night. Offer me that death, but say the good God, let me give you my life. Take me to church. I'll worship like a dog in the shiny lights. I'll tell you my sins, and you can shop in your night. Offer me that death, but say the good God, let me give you my life. No masters or kings when the ritual begins. There is no sweeter innocence than our gentle sin. In the madness and soil of that sadly scene, only then I am human, only then I am clean.
Another artist that I think is really good at slightly modifying his songs for live performances is Justin Timberlake, because he has, at least right now, he has the Tennessee Kids, which is this sort of like big band behind him. And they do like sort of this gospel soul funk kind of thing, even to his older songs that were just strictly, strictly pop. Huh. Like his most recent albums have been, you know, they've had sort of classical influences and then also sort of like really, really cool Latin American influences and jazz and blues influences. But like when you see him live, I saw him live when he was last in Ottawa, they change things slightly. And it's really, really cool. It's almost like a gospel, choir, like, when you're doing sexy back and they add these sort of like gospel types of transitions or things like that. I think it's really, really cool. I think it's a good way to keep the song fresh, even just for the artists. Like if the artist has played the song in the same version for years and years, like Sexy Back is one of his biggest songs.
Yeah.
And like, imagine having to play that song and like going to every show and knowing that everybody's going to expect you to play, to sing Sexy Back. And so even for your own sanity, you have to like slightly change it, just keep it fresh for yourself.
Yeah.
So I don't think that artists should ever say, no, this is the final version of this song, because you're going to get tired of playing that song that way. Even The Storm has been, one of our own songs had, it's like we said, it's evolved and it will probably continue to evolve. Cause we might get bored of playing it the way that we play it and try something else. But, so I think that songs, are living, breathing things almost, and that they want to be experimented with almost, I think, that's how I approach it anyway.
I really like that. And I like The Storm, when I first heard it, I really liked it. And then you guys tightened it up a little bit, but I still like having heard the original version probably over 100 times now.
So you're the one person who's listening to all of our,
well, no, when I was editing the video for it, like you have to listen to it over and over again.
You have to tell the audience what video?
The Storm. It was for the Long McQuaid music contest. Yeah. Was that two summers ago now?
Yeah.
And it was Canada wide. And I think we finished top 30?
Like 37 or something.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. That was fun.
That was pretty good.
Thanks for voting, guys.
Yeah. But I still prefer not necessarily the very first version, but I prefer that version. Like just in my mind, it makes me happier to hear that version. Do you guys, would you be able to play, say the current version, obviously you can play, but could you play that version? Could you go back? Or do you think it's like your muscle memory is now like on the new one? I don't think that's an easy question, but I'm curious.
I don't even really remember what was different about that one.
There were a few things that were different. Your guitar was different. It was less rock and distorted. We definitely could. I don't know if we want to.
Would it take a lot of effort to like remember back, or you think you would just come back, you start playing it?
I don't think so. I think that we've forgotten how to, but I think that if we listen to the way that we used to do it, then we'd be able to.
That makes sense.
It'd be almost at that point like mimicking someone else's song, I guess. I don't know. It's still the same song and it still has the same arrangement overall, but some of the ways that we played the instrument, notably guitar and drums, are different, but I think we could do it, but I just don't know if we would want to do it, or like, again, it depends on the context in which we're playing the song and the atmosphere that we're playing the song.
That's a really important point you bring up, because the atmosphere, the context, arguably from another perspective, every time we play the song, it's completely different. If I had a stressful day at work, or nerves are affecting me that day, or I'm a little bit sick, the presentation of that song in that particular venue, because of some sort of, you know, environmental factor, like they had, you know, vocals too high in the mix, in the monitors or whatever, would affect the outcome of the song too. So arguably, every time we play it, it's slightly different. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've gotten a lot better about kind of controlling our nerves and getting consistent, having, you know, pre-show rituals are very important for me, just to get back into that state of mind of, okay, I'm going on a stage, just, you know.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, in particular, Damien, watching you perform, it almost seems like you need to get a mic stand that is like either taller or has a longer arm, because you're constantly, it seems like it would be very distracting when I'm watching you perform. Like, you're constantly trying to, like, get the mic to agree with, like, to understand what you're trying to do with it. Like, you're trying to pull it closer to you because it's too far because you're playing the
mic
keyboard at the same time.
Yeah. No, I think that that's just me not knowing what I want.
Okay. So it's not the mic's
fault. It's not the mic's fault. Don't blame the inanimate object. It's completely, completely my fault. For our last show at Atomic Rooster, which was a fantastic and fun show.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for coming to that show. The first set, the mic stand was in front of the keyboard. And it's hard, because my keyboard especially is just like this big clunky thing that I hate having to carry around. And it's just, it takes up a lot of space. And so it's hard and it's awkward to get the mic close enough to me. And so when I went down and I spoke to the sound guy, his name was Andrew, fantastic sound guy. He was really great. He asked me after the set, our first set, like, how's everything going up there? Like, do you feel comfortable? Is everything sounding okay? And I said, well, I'd like to have maybe the mic closer to me. And right away he was like, oh yeah, I'll go fix that for you. And what he did was he brought the mic not in front of me, but beside me.
Oh, okay.
And then he extended it and had it perpendicular to me so that it was just kind of right beside sure. and in front of me, as opposed to reaching over this big yeah. clunky keyboard. I think that is just me not knowing, like, oh, that's a possibility. Like, yeah, I could have it that way. But the other thing for our shows is that there are some songs that I play keyboard. There are some songs that I play guitar and I'm singing. There are some songs that I don't play anything and I'm just singing, and I want to take the mic and have it. And so I think maybe what I should invest in is one of those boy band headsets. just so that I can have the freedom to move around. But no, that probably won't happen. But so yeah, working with technology is somewhat frustrating because you usually think about the songs and like the sets and what you're playing. You don't think about like the technical side to it.
And yeah,
then you
get
up there and it's like, oh yeah.
I have to put this on the record, is that we don't often give Damien enough credit for the stuff that he does on stage, because oftentimes he's switching instruments. He's gauging the audience. He's trying to make sure that the distance of his mouth to the mic is adequate, because each song requires a different, like, the voice is a very particular instrument, and to create particular effects, your distance has to be right. And each time we're dealing with a different sound guy and different people approach that art of setting up all these mics differently.
Yeah.
And so Damien's trying to sing, play, gauge the audience, well, and do all of
the
that.
Audience
Right? Exactly. Well, so it's like 10 things at a time in a live show. Well, and we don't really give him enough credit for this. We just assume, because we don't step on stage like, okay, Damien, take care of these 10, 15 things and go. So Damien does that pretty well. He doesn't.
I mean, Bill just basically plays the guitar. He just
stand there. I plug in and I'm ready to go. Like, so
it's on.
He does think it was not sometimes.
No, but what I'm trying to say is that people may not be aware of those things. Behind the scenes look at how complicated a live show might
be. There's a lot that goes on, and we always joke and make fun of me because I forget lyrics sometimes to our own songs, but it's mainly because there's a lot, like you said, I'm trying to watch the audience. I'm trying to make sure that they are engaged and that they're paying attention and having a good time. And if I need to boost the energy, then perhaps I'll talk to them, or I'll go like and physically interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. Or say some sort of corny joke to make them laugh or something. But that's very nice for you to say that. But it's what needs to be done. I mean, when people come to see a show, they shouldn't come to see just people people playing music. It should be like an entire experience. Like, I'm very comfortable with talking to people and trying to make them laugh and things like that. And I feel like that's the way that a show should be. It should be, you know, people, the musicians connecting with the audience and also trying to make them laugh and trying to have them participate. It should be an entire like experience. It shouldn't just be sitting back and watching music, because you can just like sit at home and listen to music.
Right.
And what's the huge difference in like listening to music at home and listening to it in person? The only difference is that you're seeing the people who are making music. But then you have to go a step further, and a live show has to be an overall experience where you feel something while it's something that you can't get from just sitting at home and listening to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah, there's a lot that goes into, but it's not just me. Like, you guys, everybody in the band contributes something to the live show. And when I see that all of us are having a good time, that all of us are having fun, then that makes me have a lot more fun. And then, like, try to transmit that fun to the audience, who then gives it back to us. And then it really is this huge collective and relationship, a live performance, or it should be in theory.
Yeah. You guys mentioned briefly technology and how it kind of plays a role in complicating a live performance or a recording performance as well. But in the songwriting process, do you guys use any technology? I know that a lot of artists these days, especially younger artists, are just like, they'll grab their phone and record with their phone, like just either a lyric or a riff or whatever. Do you guys use any of that, or is it just like more handwritten stuff or little notes to yourself?
Post-it technology for me is pretty good. I mean, I use the default Windows recorder because it's the easiest thing. You just, you know, it could be a 3-minute clip or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I use the available technology that I have. Like, I have used my phone, but it's whatever's available when the inspiration strikes. It could be the post-it that's beside me on the desk at work. It could be my computer. It could be a guitar. Like, it's whatever is close by. I don't know.
I'm similar in that I have this book that I write my songs into, and that's handwritten. And as far as sort of the notes or the instrumental aspect of the song goes, I just rely on memory for that, and kind of go to my piano or my guitar and try and play it out and see, and then write down the chords and even notes to myself, like, okay, it'll get quieter here or it'll speed up here or something like that. But what we do have as a band is we actually have a database or it's one working document where we have all of our lyrics for all of our songs, and that's on Google Drive, and we can go in, and I've even modified lyrics through that.
I have a really bad rap for misremembering lyrics.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes it works to, like, oh, that's even better than what he thought, like, than what I was saying. Like, what he thought I was saying is better than what I was saying.
Right, so songs do continue to evolve because I mishear lyrics.
But, and what we've been doing for our last show, what we did was we were very diligent about it's kind of a hard situation, but writing out in a Word document or what have you, the structure of the song and the lyrics and the chords, so that everybody just has this overall sort of cheat sheet or this idea of what the song is going to be, so that they don't have to rely on memory. Because, again, like I said earlier, I have this idea for a song that I might not be able to communicate to the band as well. And I know what I want from it, but they don't know, like, they're not in my head. So we last show, we tried out just writing out, or I would go through and just write out the arrangement or type out the arrangements of the songs, print off those sheets, give it to everybody so that they know what's coming next and what they're supposed to do where.
Yeah.
And that's helped, because that helps with the learning process. If you have something right in front of you that you can use, and then once you become comfortable enough for it, like with it, then you don't have to use it at all.
Yeah, because I mean, we're all busy people. The ability to capture something like that and put it out there in a more or less public space for the people that are involved to participate and add to it digitally is like invaluable. Like, I've had, you know, guitar riffs set to drum tracks that I've shared with these guys, and they're like, oh, responding to it, you know, online or in person. But it's certainly a tool that we can use more of, for sure.
I think so. Yeah. But the challenge that I referred to earlier was that for these particular songs that we did it for our last show, the songs that I had written out, I hadn't completely finished, or in my mind, they're still not finished. Like, I, and so, it was tough because I'm trying to write out the entire song for the band so that they can get the instrumental part of it.
Yeah.
But I don't even know what I want from the instrumental part of it, or I don't know what I want from the lyrics. And that might also affect the instrumental part. So it's tough because it's almost like you have to have the song completely finished before you do that. But some songs take longer than other songs.
Right.
And some songs I'm currently still working on, and I have been for the past like 2 years, I've been working on some songs. And some songs take you like 10 minutes. I think the storm took me 10 minutes while I was waiting for BL to come over and jam.
Yeah.
So it's different. It's definitely a good thing to use for other members of the band. If you're a singer songwriter, then you don't necessarily need to do that to maybe have your own, just like have it somewhere so that you don't ever forget. But it's useful if you're in a band because, like we mentioned earlier, the way that we work is maybe some person comes up with the initial concept and then brings it to everybody else. So all those other people who weren't involved in the initial concept need to have some sort of reference point that they can use so that they can sort of expand on that and add on that. I think those are the only ways that we use technology other than just our instruments, which I suppose could be considered technology as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the interesting things that I know I've learned, and this is coming from sort of my entry in the last few years into the Apple Mac ecosystem. I've played around with GarageBand. They have a really good interface. Like, it's great to record. Like, I haven't actually, it's been a while since I recorded any podcasts using GarageBand, but they have a bunch of guitar loops, a bunch of drum loops. But they also have virtual instruments where you can literally play, you can play the drums either with your fingers or you can set up which drums, like they have the toms, they have the hi-hat, they have bass drum and all of these drum sets that you can just put, if you want either things to be louder or quieter or more complex or simpler beats, and you can like strum guitar. I found it really interesting, not really knowing that much about music, just playing around with that interface is a really great way to hear quickly what works and what doesn't. I don't know if there'd be any benefit to somebody who does know music, but like if I was sitting there, I don't know, like on a couch or something, and I wanted to know if a certain chord progression would work, like I could literally, and I've done this, grab my iPad, open the virtual guitar and play 16 bars of that chord progression and see if it sounds good. And like, I don't have the technical knowledge to know if it's technically a good sort of chord progression. Like there are at least loose rules you're supposed to follow, or like that there's sort of guidelines to making a song that sounds good, but you can sort of play around and just, I feel like it would be useful to me if I was a musician, and I've made some really simple songs, over the past year, just trying to see. Again, different styles. They have a bunch of different guitar kits, and you can add virtual pedals to the virtual guitars. Mm-hmm. But I assume that if you have a melody or a chord progression or lyrics in mind, you, BL, would probably grab a guitar and would just play it out and record it.
Mm-hmm. And I think for me, because I prefer old school, I'm not trying to like shoot down the GarageBand or anything, but when you say you want to test an idea of GarageBand and you are a chord progression, you play it, I would call Damien, or in the next, you know, meeting with Damien, I'd say, hey, here's my chord progression. What do you think? So he would be my, like using your kind of musical buddies to do that sort of testing. So I think for me, that's more rich. Because, you know, Damien's a fantastic musician. He has an ear for this kind of thing, and I trust him. And we have this relationship. So I think for me, that's how I would do it if I were to test something. But, I mean, I can always just record it and play it back to myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
At work, if I'm at work and I'm thinking of a chord progression, then I'll sneak on to like a virtual piano. There's a online piano website, and you can play chords on this website. Yeah. And so actually, The Hero started with me at work because I was listening to an Arcade Fire song and I was at work and I was writing out on a notepad, actually, some of these lyrics. And then I went on to that site to see if the chord progression I was thinking about would actually work. because I didn't have a piano with me. I wish I had a piano
that I could like a music room.
But the Hero started out on a piano online. That's where it started out. And then I wrote down the chord progression, and then I came home and I played it out on my real piano, and it sounded good, and we went from there. So yeah, I've done sort of the same thing, because it, like I mentioned before, like it just hits you anywhere. So mm-hmm. you could be at work, you could be walking down the street, shopping in the grocery store, and it'll hit you anywhere. And if you don't get it down within a certain period of time, it's going to expire and you're mm-hmm. going to forget.
I totally agree with this. A lot of people have this concept, maybe like a misconception, that, you know, a lot of artists sit down and go, okay, I have now 4:30. I have between now and 5 o'clock to write. But maybe you have to do that at some points over your life, you know, but more or less for, I guess, me and Damien, at least, we're constantly writing. We always have a bank of ideas, of thoughts, of progressions or riffs or things that sound cool, you know, that are always floating around that you want to.
Because you have to do it. For me, like, I feel like I have to do it when I feel inspired. Like, I cannot force myself to sit down and create a song. I have to feel inspired. So it has to come to me spontaneously first.
Sure.
And then I'll take the time to sit down and figure it out. But it doesn't work the other way around for me, where I just have nothing and I sit down and it's just like, okay, let's make a song. That's how people do it, right?
But,
they just sit down at tables and make songs.
Yeah.
But that said, have you guys seen online where it's like a songwriting challenge where you write a song a day for a month or something?
Yeah.
Have you seen those?
No, I haven't seen
and
that.
And then you post your song on YouTube. I mean, it could be a really short song, a long song, but the challenge is to continue to write, to get into that habit.
Jimmy Fallon had a bit for a long time, a segment where he would get audience members who could play instruments. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but you get audience members who could play instruments, give them a weird and obscure topic for a song, give them about half an hour, and they would go backstage and write a song and then come out and play it in front
of everybody. That's crazy.
And the people and the audience would like vote on whose song was better.
Oh,
wow. He had a segment on that. I don't know why he hasn't done it lately, but I thought that was really, really, really cool, because just to see what people come up with when they're under pressure and under like a very strict deadline. And I know certain bands like Mumford and Sons have done this thing where they have the 10 song game, where you have to write 10 songs in 24 hours. And it's just sort of to keep their songwriting abilities going.
That's cool.
And they challenge themselves. And actually, one of the songs on Babel called Reminder was a product of the 10 song game, because Ted just went and just wrote the song and brought it to them. And they were like, that's actually a really good song. Like, we should use it. And so I think that that might be a good thing to do too, just to challenge yourself, just to see what you could do. And you might actually get some really good stuff out of it. But I never really sit down without any external motivator and just say, okay, let's just fashion a song out of midair.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a challenge.
Yeah.
But it could be fun. I mean,
it could be. Yeah. It could be a fun game. Yeah.
There's a guy online. I'm familiar with a little bit of his work, but his name is Jonathan Mann. And I'm not sure if he's still doing it, but there was I think it was about a year, he was doing an experiment where he would sit down and every day for a whole year, he would create some piece of music, whether it was a song, whether it was just an instrumental, whether like, he would just create some kind of musical piece and post it.
Hmm.
And I like, that just seems like the coolest possible. Obviously you have to, like, he doesn't have a stereotypical 9-to-5 job. Like a lot of them, either he's doing jingles or he's doing songs for ads, or he's just like producing. A lot of people need little things, or not. It's not necessarily a jingle or something, but they need music for something.
Yeah.
And so he does a lot of that. But to have that sort of thing where just every day you dedicate some time to creating something new, like you get 365 ideas in a year.
Yeah.
In addition to all the other work you're doing.
Yeah.
I just think it's really cool because it doesn't take a lot of time.
I think there's a merit to doing something like that because, you know, the way our brains are wired, the more you do something, the better you get kind of thing, right? It's like a muscle. If you keep it, if you exercise, you know, you're going to keep that muscle, you know, nice and strong. So we can liken it to as like a songwriting muscle that you have to keep, you know, training. Cause if you don't, you're going to slip into, you know, a place where you're not able to capture that idea or thought, right? So you might be walking down the street, but it's been like 6 months since you wrote the last thing and you're trying to capture it. But as you're trying to capture it, you don't have the either capacity or the, you know, means to capture it. Then you're in a, that's less good.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever get into a state of mind, or have you ever been, I guess, maybe when you were first starting out, where you're trying to write something and you're just like, either like, oh, it's embarrassing to do this, or this is just bad. And you get into a point where anything you can write is just, you feel like it's not good enough to share. Is that like, it's not really writer's block. It's just like good writer's block. Like nothing good is coming out. Does that happen?
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You sometimes you get this flow. You're into this particular emotion or feeling. You're writing. You're like, oh yeah, it's really good. And you look at it the next day, like that's not something I would share with Damien for sure. Like it's not going to fly. But that process of capturing it is really important because that's again that skill.
You know?
I think the feeling you just described is the feeling that I have with every single song in the beginning. Like I'm not sure if it's actually a good song. I shouldn't say every song I feel that way, but a lot of the songs I'm scared. Like I'm scared because I respect the other members of Sons of Pluto deeply as musicians, and I want to uphold a standard that we have.
Yeah.
Unless we're consciously making fun of ourselves, like a song like Retro Love, which is just kind of like a song that's really, really fun and still has some clever words and lyrics to it, but it was just like really, really fun and never really took it too seriously.
Right.
But especially when like playing, because Sons of Pluto existed for a couple of years before we actually started writing our own songs. A huge part of that was I didn't feel strong enough or capable enough to write my own songs. When I'm listening to people like the Beatles and Arcade Fire and the Black Keys and stuff like that, and like really cool songs. Like, how do these people come up with this stuff? Like, I could never write something as cool as that, you know? At some point, I guess, actually, it was another external motivator saying that we had this Christmas show coming up and we wanted to have our own songs that we could debut.
One from each person at the time.
Yeah.
Four.
So at the time, I was really, really, really into Mumford & Sons, and I still really enjoy them for their songwriting and their imagery, but I was really into that. And that's when my first song that I wrote came out. But I was still very, very vulnerable, because you have to kind of put yourself out there initially to your bandmates, but then ultimately to the world. Like I don't think about it so much, or I don't feel embarrassed about it when we play our songs live, but definitely there was an anxiety there that first time, because this is something that I've come up with, and it might be something that kind of conveys my personal feelings and my fears and my insecurities, and then I'm just gonna let everybody listen to it.
It's like, definitely, you're bearing a little bit.
Okay. Sure. So, there's definitely that initial fear.